Hello, welcome to the 23rd episode of the At YouTube podcast, talking all things YouTube, including album news, tour dates, and community discussions from the staff of At YouTube. It's been a little while, so we're a little extra giddy, but I have with me Mr. Matt McGee. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris.
Silent treatment. I can always fill in for you, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I just wanted to give you a hard time. Yeah. What's your name again?
I forget how this all works.
I have no idea. Yeah. It's been way, way too long. I feel very, very rusty.
Sherry is also with us.
There's this girl on. She's very excited about topics and stuff. What's going on here?
Bring it. I will guarantee you this is the best podcast we've done this year.
That's assuming it actually gets out and we remember, or I remember, I guess. I'm using the royal we. Is that right? That we remember how to do this all. But yes, we're back after a little bit of a hiatus, unplanned extended hiatus. We'll blame the Mexican tequila and or Wi-Fi and other issues. Matt was on a holiday. Sherry, did you go anywhere warm and tropical?
No, I was sat waiting for the phone to ring to say we're recording a podcast. Both of you ditched me, man.
Oh, sorry, Sherry. Matt and I
Sherry went to Fall River, which is warm and tropical for Massachusetts.
And I might have passed through New Bedford.
There you go.
Good. Regional jokes. we're back on the show. We're recording again Wednesday nights or other times we will let you know, but Wednesday nights typically-ish, 8:30 Central Standard Time, and other times vary around the world because there's time zones and things like that, I guess, is what I hear. We have the hashtag at YouTube podcast is where you can post pictures if you're listening to the show. I'd love to see a picture of where you are listening to the show. There isn't any because we haven't recorded a podcast in a while, so understandably, nothing.
You want me to do that right now?
Sure. Yeah, Sherry posted one just before we started recording, so you can do a live at YouTube, hashtag at YouTube podcast thingy. All
right. Well, you go ahead and talk for a while, and then okay. I'll try and figure out if I can do a selfie. So
we've given, apparently, I was told by Sherry before the show that we've given up on Snapchat as a thing. That was from 2015. Now we're moving on.
Yeah, that was so last year.
I don't know. Have we landed somewhere? I guess we're waiting for Bono to tell us what next social network we're going to use this year.
Well, you know what's amazing about that? So they've been actually quite active. I'm going to go to their Instagram account right now. But they've been quite active, except for Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody seen him recently? I'm starting to get worried.
Yeah, I know. He's the only one who hasn't made an appearance in some form, either in comments, taking a photo and commenting on it, or posting a picture of himself. So I don't know where in the world is Larry?
Yeah, I would have expected something after Edge post with the caption of riding my ass or something like that.
And then
Bono's just laying on the beach with all these Rolling Stones.
Yeah, they're a little heavy on these.
And then Adam's off at these museums and such. And the only time that we've seen Larry's because this little kid bumped into him in Europe and snapped a picture and then posted it, and that was the last that we've seen of Larry. So in pure Mullen fashion, he's just vanished.
Edge and Bono are pretty heavy on the dad puns with their their postings lately.
where does Larry go, or where did Larry go for those bull's blood treatment? Wasn't that like some very exotic locale for that? Is that where he is, perhaps?
Perhaps, yeah. There's Matt and his selfie.
Did it get posted?
Just got posted, yeah. We'll throw that in the chat room as well. If you want to listen live, we record live sometimes, goodstuff.fm/live, and there's a little chat room. And we sometimes pay attention and sometimes we ignore them, depending on whether we're using a Southern accent or not. Anyways, moving on before we get into trouble. We have the other hashtag, Ask At YouTube, that we do for questions and commentary and things from listeners throughout the weeks before we record. And you can send those in via Twitter using hashtag Ask At YouTube. And we've got a few from, we didn't solicit very many while we were gone. So we've got a few, but one from my listener, Mr. Matt McGee. how that one snuck in here.
I know that guy. Him. Wow, this is like the best question that's ever been submitted. Look at this.
Oh, sorry. Well, if you two were a tropical destination, which one would they be? Question mark.
Wow.
So, I don't know. Matt, do you have a response to this, to Mr. Matt McKee?
I think I sent this question in when you were at a tropical destination and I was at a tropical destination and we were comparing like sunrise or sunset photos or some such thing. And
which is probably like the most like worst thing to do to anybody who's following both of us and also happens to live in a winter climate.
To argue about which tropical destination is better.
My sunset's better than yours.
I can't answer this question because I think I've only visited one tropical destination in my life, and that would be Hawaii. Unless you count like, you know, the Miami area as a tropical destination. I've been there. But so Hawaii is like it for me. So I don't know that I'm qualified to even answer that question. I would answer it as Hawaii. Because you two, like Hawaii, is consistently fantastic. How's that?
Has you two ever, what's the most tropical destination you two has ever played? That would be another way to spin that question.
Probably Hawaii.
Was it Hawaii that would be the, I guess Mexico, like they do play South America, like for those of us in the northern hemispheres, anywhere sort of south and warm feels kind of tropical and. Teleject in the chat room does not count Miami as a tropical destination. So
then that is it.
We have the
Teleject
ruling.
Says it, then that is it.
Yeah, I'd have to go with something like that. So, I mean, any beach destination. I don't know where. We're still waiting to find out where Larry is, I guess. That would kind of help us figure out where they would be.
I'm going to follow them. When they do the tour of the Bahamas, I'm going to follow them. So
there you go.
I'm going to every show on that tour.
The next question from @Charoff asks, in recent days, do you have a U2 song that you can't get out of your head or are enjoying dwelling on? And they said for them it was Zoo Station right now. Sherry, what about anything from you? What's a U2? Or have you been even listening? Have you sort of abstained from U2 since the tour ended just to like have a cleansing?
I really have. Yeah. No, it's been refreshing, you know, just to be able to get out of that tour mindset. And I found it very difficult to do so. So as a fan, if I found it very difficult to do so, I can only imagine what it's like being part of the crew and coming home and being like, I don't know what to do with myself. Is this my house? So I needed a bit of decompression myself. But it's not helpful when your husband gets one of those virtual reality goggle things for Christmas, and the kids want to watch the Song for Someone video on it consistently. Because my kids are now coming up to me and just, you know, sprinkling a little bit of a chorus in my ear or just going, this is a song, and then that's it, and then just walk away. I'm like, I know that song. it sounds vaguely familiar to me.
That's in your ear.
But, you know, they are completely into this whole virtual reality thing. And I think we're turning into really bad parents by letting them play with his VR set so much. But
has anybody fallen down the stairs while wearing it yet?
No, okay. No. But, you know, if Songs of Experience goes the way of the VR set, I don't think anybody will see my eyeballs for a solid 2 weeks.
Maybe that's where Larry is. He's been too busy doing like motion capture video recording with like a 360 degree camera on his head. Just walking around somewhere.
I'm right here. You'll see me.
Yeah. I actually haven't, I didn't listen to very much music, period, other than Mexican banda music and stuff when we were traveling. And so I actually haven't listened, other than I played Actung Baby today. That's why pre-show music was Actung Baby. But I haven't had any sort of U2 stuff. I think that, in fairness to Charoff, this question was asked back when the tour had just ended. We just haven't recorded a podcast since then to answer any of these questions. So it's not his or her fault, but I don't have anything that's been stuck in my head. How about you, Matt?
So that explains why the next question is about Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, exactly. What would you like for...
if you two were a Thanksgiving food, what would they be? Yeah. We should really have been asking for more current questions. I think might have been something we wanted to do during our tropical vacations.
Perhaps. Right. If we worked hard, we would have planned.
As
that.
Opposed to the what's a McLobster?
Yeah, I didn't understand that whole conversation you guys were having. Just FYI, that's why I didn't reply to any of those tweets. I don't want you to think I was rude. I was just clueless. So
that's... You didn't want to be shellfish.
It's okay. But anyway, to answer the Shirov's question, no, I'm in very much in currently in an Adele phase right now. So I have been listening to Adele and her new album like on repeat for the last couple weeks, and also in a Boxer Rebellion phase because they're my second favorite band behind U2, and they are teasing that they're going to have a new album coming out later this year and going on tour. So I am just getting myself excited for that and listening to a bunch of their music as well. So I, like Sherry, I have not been listening to much U2 of late.
Yeah, I've been mostly listening to Peter Gabriel, Sting, Van Morrison, because I'm going to be going to see them in the next few months. I'm taking my mom to see Garth Brooks in a couple weeks, so I'm re-educating myself on all of their discography before heading into the shows. So I kind of feel like I'm cheating on you too a little bit, but you know, when you're not on the road, there's other bands in town who...
Yeah, you can't sit around waiting for them.
You know?
Who do they think we are?
Damn
fans?
Podcasters and nerds about you two. Nothing better to do than talk about them? No. So speaking of, I guess, the flip side of that question, the next question came in from Bruner Caffey, at Bruner Caffey. Which of the U2 classics, air quotes classics, you wouldn't mind to be dropped from the set list when the tour returns? And this, he said, Pride and Beautiful Day, which I will actually just quickly say, those are probably the two that I would also, I'm like, Beautiful Day and Pride are great when they actually get played live, but they aren't like a songs that I look forward to hearing because I just feel like I've heard them a lot. But don't send me emails. Don't write me letters. Not that you don't have to write me a letter.
That's
but
it, man. You are done. This is your last podcast. Volcano's terrible.
Remember what Matt said, everybody? Remember what Matt said?
You know what else I don't like? You know what else I don't like? See, I knew it was coming. Volcano's terrible.
Right? Matt said that, not me. Okay, anyways, Matt, which song would you like to be dropped from the set?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't get worked up over the set lists like most people do. But I don't know. You know, because I'm working on the bit, and I've tweeted out some kind of teasers about the big fan survey that we're doing that will hopefully launch around March 1st or so, if not sooner, but probably March 1st. Anyway, one of the questions in there asks basically the same question, you know, what of the big U2 classics, you know, if the band asked you which one they should drop, what would you say? And so, you know, I was testing the survey and having to choose an answer and all that. And I think I chose Elevation for some reason, just because I think, I don't know, it's fun to jump up and down and all that sort of stuff, but that's like one song that has like never changed from the first time they've played it. So, you know, I could go without hearing that one for a while.
You remember the U2 Brother remix?
Yes, I do.
Sherry, how about you?
This is a tricky question because when you have your general music enthusiast who may not necessarily be into U2 going to a U2 show, Pride and Beautiful Day and all the ones that we kind of feel, you know, are done, those are the ones that invigorate the crowd the most. So to remove some of those that the diehards would like to see gone might actually detract from the show. So this isn't a cop-out answer, but I just feel like whatever the narrative is that the band wants to put out, if the song doesn't fit the narrative, then it shouldn't be played. So
that's the politically correct answer, I guess.
You know,
not to get in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. No. But there really isn't a song, and for me, it could change on a weekly basis. So I'm just happy enough to have something live happening.
There's quite the debate going on in the chat room with U2GW saying City of Blinding Lights, and I kind of agreed, and then Matt shouted at us saying, no, I love City of Blinding Lights, it must never be dropped. Matt, did you want to just follow up with any sort of declaration of love for City of Blinding Lights before we move on?
I love it. I think it's one of the most underrated songs that they've done. Nobody ever talks about it as one of the, you know, one of the great U2 songs, and I think it's fantastic. I think the lyrics are terrific. I think the sound is, I just love that song.
I think because it's not one of the U2 classics. That's why I'm trying to figure out a way to get in trouble.
And again, you have been now fired twice on this podcast already, and we are only 15 minutes in.
Hey, Matt came in the chat room and says get rid of bad. So, I mean, that's like, I'm going to throw him or her.
He's fired too.
But there's certain songs that take on special meanings if you followed them from tour to tour. So like City of Blinding Lights for me, for the Vertigo tour, when you've got all the confetti coming out of the sky at the start of the show and it set the mood, when it's performed now, it harkens back to the previous tour. You know, same thing with Elevation a couple tours ago. They actually did change that up a little bit with the little fake out going into the second verse, where it didn't go into the full band. It kept with Edge's wah-wah guitar going until it went into the first chorus. So, you know, I think that some of the older songs, by them keeping it into the set list, it brings back the fond memory of when you heard it before or when you saw it live, and then having the joy of seeing how they're presenting it this time as opposed to what they did before. You know, same thing with Streets. I know that they will never drop Streets from this point on, but the joy that everybody had with the red screen going to the white light brought back all those warm fuzzies about back when you first saw it watching Rattle and Hum or during the Zoo TV tour. And then once they started monkeying around with it, with the African flags and doing this, that, and the other. But when they went back to red, even Matt said, now I have to go back to another show to experience it. So, you know, there are certain songs that hold special memories for a variety of different reasons for a variety of different people. So to say I want to have pride dropped, if it's speaking up on behalf of a political cause or some sort of humanitarian thing or whatever Bono wants to talk about, then it should belong in the show because that's part of his soapbox. So I don't want to take away any of their capability to tell their story.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. That's fair.
I agree. That's fair.
Yeah.
And look, they've been doing this for 30 years. They're pretty good at putting a set list together as far as I'm concerned. It's not like they're, you know, just starting out and that they've have a history of playing bad live shows, you know? So I just tend to say, you know, you guys play what you're going to play and I'm going to enjoy it or I'm not going to enjoy it. And that's fine. So,
yeah.
And I always do enjoy it.
Luckily, they're not actually officially soliciting feedback from us on
exactly.
It's all for fun. Points don't matter. and Matt, this last question, I don't know the context here, so I don't know if you do, but hey, it's Carolina asks, Matt, you sure you don't have a side job manning Jimmy Fallon's cue cards? Or do you have a twin we don't know about? Hashtag. Is there a Jimmy Fallon cue card guy that resembles Matt?
If there is, that's news to me. How old is that question? Is that like
that's
from Thanksgiving also?
No, that's that's from 19. No,
that's from when we did the original podcast 10 years ago. I have no idea what Carolina is talking about.
Yeah, so Carolina, you can tweet or whatever another ask at you too with a photo, a screen capture or something. Maybe we can follow up, find out what Matt's really doing in his spare time. All right, moving on to the roundtable, which will cover a few topics, but One of the ones is just a bit of follow-up, which kind of alluded to, I guess, earlier, but is where the heck have we been? Never mind where Larry's been, but where the heck have we been for the last... Has it really been 7 weeks? I guess
it has been seven weeks, and people that were tweeting and emailing, you know, have you guys shut down the podcast and all this sort of stuff? And I'm just trying to tell them, no, we're just taking a little break and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
had to wait for news. We finally got news.
Yeah, it kind of actually worked. It wasn't planned. Like, I think when we left the last episode, if you're listening to episode 23 now after listening to 22, just, you know, like days ago, you'll be thinking, what are they talking about? There was no break. But when we left the podcast, we had plans to do recordings from our remote venues and things like that. But my remote venue certainly didn't pan out very well as for Wi-Fi. It was great for sunsets, but not great for internet and recording and things like that. So that's my excuse anyways. And it actually worked out well because, like Sherry said, there wasn't much news to talk about anyways. And not that we don't like talking with each other, but... You know, every so often you need a break from your friends, from your soundboard, from your friends. So, but yeah, that's where we've been. Apologies for not following through on that. If you were deeply hurt, you can have a refund at the door.
And you didn't even send me flowers. There were no flowers.
I send you
no
tacos.
Chocolates. No.
You didn't get the tacos?
No.
Oh, sorry about that. Sherry, you had a suggestion of a topic, I know one that's near and dear to your heart and your passions.
Well, there's two. So which one would you like to delve into first, Mr. Enns?
Well, I was thinking the fan club, announcement and emails and things might be worth discussing for folks.
You think?
Yeah. Oh my God. Here we go. I can already tell.
Bring it.
Exactly. I can just, Chris, you and I will just sit back and just listen.
Welcome to the Boston McPotty Mouth podcast. Now, I have been amused, I think is the
hold
best
on,
way
before
to
you start. No,
ahead.
Hold on. Before you start, I need to interrupt. Does anyone know the difference between a serigraph and a lithograph?
Is this something like something you have in your throat?
I'm just asking.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Because I know they've been selling lithographs on U2.com for decades.
It is also known as silkscreen. Printing. One color is printed
at a
time.
You're using Google. You're
so
cheating.
So several screens can be used to produce a multicolored image or design. Yes, Google.
But anyway.
It's a type of screen printing.
There we go. Okay.
I remember getting that email when they sent it out last week or whatever, whenever it was. And I was like, okay, A, what is a serigraph? And B, I couldn't tell. I had to read the email like three times. Are they telling me that this is the free gift, or are they telling me that this is something they're just adding to the store? Or it was, I don't know, the wording on that email was so vague. I was like, what on earth? And then I went on Twitter and people are all saying, oh, this is the best gift and this is the worst gift and I love it and I hate it. And I was like, oh, so that's the gift. I had no idea. So maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I'm just slow. I just, you know.
Maybe
I didn't know what a serigraph was. I didn't know what a lithograph was, and so yeah. Anyway, okay, Sherry.
Okay. So anyway, yes, I've been rather amused in seeing the sentiment about this particular gift because I think people were really anticipating that they were going to get a live show as the gift, and when they said no, we're going to be sending you these roughly 18 by 24 set of four serigraphs, they're like, what the? So I've seen responses from I'm a grown-up. I'm not going to be putting up posters of a rock band on my wall, to what a cheap gift, to, you know, what do you mean we're getting pictures? What am I going to do with these? So, you know, I think that if you took a step back and actually saw the value in this particular gift, I think that you might have a slightly different perspective on it. At the shows, there were no posters to be purchased in the merchandising stalls. Everything about this tour was widescreen, and the serographs are portrait. So even from an artistic point of view, they're presenting you with a different view from the Innocence and Experience tour. So it's unlike anything that we've seen over the course of 2015. I will admit, you know, I'm running out of wall space in my U2 shrine known as my house. So I don't know where I would put them right now, but I just feel like it's a quality gift that was actually well thought out. I don't think that they slapped it together really quick and thought, well, you know, we'll just throw this out to the fan base. I think that there was some serious discussion that went into it. And in researching past gifts, they have not sent out a show from a current tour until long after that tour had concluded. So, you know, for the 360 tour, the Rose Bowl DVD came out in 2010 from the 2009 concert. It wasn't until 2012 when we got U22 that was like a best of the live performances. And then the following year, you got Edge's picks with From the Ground Up. So their live offering from the 360 tour came well after the tour concluded. I will admit, I was kind of hoping for the Roxy club show,
right.
But in reading the fine print with the fan club membership details, it doesn't sound like the serigraphs will be your only gift this year, in that I think what they're going to try to do when the new album comes out or when the tour resumes in the fall, because we've got every indication that the tour is resuming in the fall, that they're going to try to offer to the paid members some sort of streaming again or something. They don't know what it is. I'm sure that they've got to pass through 5 different rounds of legal in order to decide what they're able to do. But I think that they needed to have something to send out now, because they're not prepared to make any other announcement until much later into the year. So, you know, I feel bad that so many people feel like this is a junk gift, but if you look at what they've offered for the tour thus far, it's something that is unique, you couldn't buy elsewhere, and it really captures the essence of what the Innocence and Experience tour has been, and we're still mid-cycle in all of this. So that's my 2 cents for what it's worth, take it or leave it.
Yeah, I haven't, I wasn't due to travel or whatever and stuff, I wasn't seeing any of the sort of backlash and whatever responses to the gift. And I wasn't, even when I got the email, I was like Matt Moore, where I wasn't really clued into the fact that this was a gift. I thought it was more like, hey, coming soon in our store, you know, these pictures or whatever. And it's like, okay, I might check that out, I guess. But reading the post on UT.com, it is obviously very clear now that subscribers will receive an exclusive collection of serigraphs, which is defined as a printed design produced by means of a silkscreen.
Okay.
So, there you go. Yeah, I'm with you, Cher, though. I think that it definitely leaves plenty of sort of room open for something to happen down the road with future gifts related to the tour or the new tour or something in between. So,
yeah, and even the wording as far as the pre-sales go, it's not if, it's when. So, you know, they're giving every indication that this renewal cycle will include some form of a pre-sale for something.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep joking with people on Twitter and, well, before we ended in 2015, I guess, anyways, that we still haven't heard official news about a tour date and, you know, ticket announcements and stuff like that. But definitely U2.com hasn't been at all cagey about saying that there is going to be tickets to be bought and subscribers will be able to get a pre-sale on those. So good signs, I guess, for those of us holding out for more tour dates to come, I'm sure.
As long as the ticket bots don't go stealing them all on us.
Good segue.
7 weeks, we still got it.
That was fantastic, Sherry.
Yeah. So what Sherry is so eloquently referring to is the, how many pages was it, Sherry, that you've read?
I've got like 60-something. Yeah, you know.
So set aside the next reading. Couple hours. Sherry's going to just basically recite it for you from memory, and then we'll discuss. Maybe after every 5 pages or so, we'll just take questions.
That will be podcast number 23, extended remix.
Exactly. 43-page report on from the Attorney General in New York on ticket resale business being a quote unquote fixed game. So, Sherry, you're probably the most well equipped person to give us some sort of summary on what's in this document.
They didn't tell us anything we didn't already know. I think. You know,
thank you for beginning that way, because okay, good. I'm glad we agree on that.
No, yeah, you know, we've been reporting on this with the U2 angle, obviously, for years now. We personally experienced it back in July of 2015 at Madison Square Garden, where several of us were directly impacted by this. We've been monitoring the way that Ticketmaster and TM Plus and StubHub and all these other organizations and outfits have been operating. So, you know, there comes a point where you just have to wonder, is it me? Am I just missing something? So what the New York Attorney General's office did was basically validate all of the things that we've been complaining about or pointing out as being unfair, or, you know, I can't believe this is happening. And certainly on this the recent tour in 2015, the band tried to take certain steps in limiting certain types of tickets, like GA was going to be paperless, but you couldn't transfer it. But you know, to have it clearly state in the Attorney General's report, and of course everybody picked up on it, that there was a bot that was able to purchase over 1,000 U2 tickets for New York City in you know, record time. And then by the end of the day, they were able to get 15,000 U2 tickets across the tour. It was insanity, absolute insanity. So what ended up happening was some of the measures that they placed to help the fans, which also hurt the fans in several ways, were, I can't even imagine how much worse it could have been had they not put in place some of those ticketing procedures, if this is what the Attorney General's office reported back. I mean, it boggles the mind. So what is rather bothersome about it, though, is, you know, the Attorney General's office is making recommendations about, you know, that we have to change the law, we have to end the ban on non-transferable paperless tickets, we have to increase transparency regarding ticket allocations and limits and all these things. And I do not believe that they are going to be able to get a law that they can enact if they haven't been able to do anything up to this point. And certainly in the New York market, it's so embedded into a secondary reselling market, they are going to have a tough time in their state house getting it to pass, especially after they passed legislation many years ago allowing the resellers to resell. So, you know, like I said, they're not telling us anything that we didn't already know. I just don't know how they're going to create that positive change that needs to happen.
Yeah, there's a funny quote in the article. It says, "The greatest evil that theatergoers in this city have to contend with is the ticket speculator. They are practically highwaymen and hold up everybody that goes to a place of amusement, from a New York magistrate in 1901. So
yeah,
it's been going on a while. A little while.
Centuries.
Back in, anyways. And it's amazing how, like you said, 15,000 tickets that one broker and a colleague racked up and sold for as high marked up, like 49% markup up to 7,000% markup.
Yeah.
So like on a GA ticket was what, $65 or something in the States? I forget how much they were.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. So like, okay. I mean, that's, you know, it's 75 or whatever. My math is not great. 90 some bucks at 50% markup, and then like it's just insane. Obviously, it probably wasn't just a GA ticket even too that they were selling for 7,000% markup. So the amount of money that these people made off of U2, but U2 didn't see a dime. And yeah, it's just kind of like...
But it's not just those resellers. And this is something that I've been writing about pretty consistently in OTRs and even in my last U2 list article. You have Ticketmaster with their own official reselling side of it. And so in the Attorney General's report on page 5, and I doth quote, that...
Read at least up to page 5.
You know, you know, it says here, we are also interested in the degree to which excessive service charges may constitute evidence of abusive monopoly power, especially as they relate to the resale of sports tickets. This is about how, you know, the Yankees and other professional sports teams would have their own reselling site where they wouldn't allow the reseller to sell the ticket for less than face value. But this also gets to Ticketmaster, which is owned by Live Nation, Ticketmaster having its own reselling platform, taking service charges both on the ticket when it was first sold, and then if you go to resell it using their particular platform, they are once again getting another service charge on a ticket that they've already gotten a service charge on. No matter how many times you end up reselling it, they're getting additional service charges on that same ticket. And they hold the monopoly on that because they control the ticket inventory. So where I ran into a problem, and I took it all the way up to the Massachusetts Attorney General's office last year and ended up getting nowhere with Ticketmaster for obvious reasons, was that when tickets went on sale for one of the Boston shows and it was showing sold out and they were only offering TM Plus tickets, I succumbed. I bought a TM Plus ticket because it's my local show, only to have additional face value inventory then become available the day after. And I had no recourse because a TM Plus ticket is not eligible for refund. So I was stuck with this ticket under the assumption that the show was actually sold out and this was my only way in. So if Ticketmaster can control the inventory of face value tickets to a degree where they can shut off all the face value tickets so that they can make additional revenue on the resale tickets and then slowly add to the inventory as they see fit, then they're controlling the market in such a monopolistic way that the consumer is being misled into believing that there are no face value tickets when there really are. And that was my main gripe about this whole process with the Innocence and Experience tour as it related to the Boston shows. Because honestly, the first two nights in Boston did indeed sell out. So when they put on nights 3 and 4, I assumed, well, those are going to sell out too. And when they did show sold out, only to have the day after, and I tweeted the heck out of this at the time, only to have the day after, all of a sudden all this new inventory popped in. But I was told that the day before that there wasn't any new inventory, and I paid $80 above face for a seat that, quite frankly, I could have gotten a better package for that type of a price. I felt duped. So, you know, it goes into the whole buyer beware thing, but the Attorney General's report only highlights the fact that Ticketmaster themselves have a monopoly because they can control the inventory as it goes through. And by them having a reselling option themselves, it's in their best interest to get you to buy the higher resale ticket because they're making more money on the service charge, because that service charge is a percentage. It's not a flat rate.
So, yeah, I mean, look, like I said, there's nothing new in the whole report. And I swear we've read this report 5 years ago or 10 years ago or whenever it was. And, you know, obviously there's corruption in the system. I mean, you get on, you know, I'm a Seahawks season ticket holder. I go to Mariners games, you know, every year, or maybe almost every year. And, you know, it's, you know, and, you know, searching for Adele tickets or searching for U2 tickets or whatever it is. And so you get online and you see that, you know, all of a sudden in this one section of the arena, you know, there's like three entire rows of a section that are all available for sale, you know, on the secondary market. And you just know that that's one of these guys with the bots, you know, just buying up, you know, hundreds and hundreds of tickets, you know, as quick as they can. And it's, you know, yeah, it stinks and it's terrible. At the same time, I'll play devil's advocate though for just a minute. As a, I think many of us will remember what happened to our friend Justin Kent. Was it in New York, Sherry? I think it was in New York. I think it was at one of the early, yeah, it was. It was at one of the early New York shows where he responded to, I think it was a Craigslist ad or something like that, and he drove up to, you know, different part of the city, and he bought tickets from somebody that, you know, was unofficial and selling these tickets, and they ended up being fakes. And so he was out, I don't remember what the dollar figure was, but it was
a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, it was pretty substantial. And, you know, that sucks for him. However, at least with the Ticketmaster, you know, official resale venue, you know you are getting legitimate tickets. And as someone who, like I said, I'm a Seahawks fan. And, you know, for years, the only way to get Seahawks tickets would be through the official, you know, NFL resale site. And I appreciated the fact that I knew, even though I was paying more than face value, I knew I was getting legitimate tickets and that I was not going to have a problem when I got to the venue. I was going to get right in and there's my seats. And so, yeah, I agree. You know, I hate the fact that that there's a, you know, an extra service charge, you know, and to, you know, that's very bothersome. And it is bothersome. I think there's no doubt that you know, as you were saying, Sherry, you know, Ticketmaster certainly holds back a percentage of these tickets. And in all likelihood, I think we can assume that some of those, you know, go straight into the resale system. But, you know, again, as a buyer, I'm like, all right, you know, hey, if I have to pay more, at least I know I'd rather buy them from here than through eBay, Craigslist, my local newspaper, or whatever it might be. So I think there is something of a service being performed there. I agree, however, that it's not as, I don't know what the word is. It's not as clean as it could be, perhaps.
Like, because is the problem, not that we're in any position to be experts on this and have a solution, but is the problem like that it's just one company, Ticketmaster, that basically owns this business? And then,
well, I mean, there's StubHub too. I mean, you know, they're not the only ones. I mean, they're the only ones that have the official deals with the venues and the sports teams and, you know, the promoters and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, but there's StubHub, and I think there's Vivid Seats or Vivid Tickets or something. There's a couple others that do this same thing. It's just, it's, those are slightly more risky. I mean, like I've bought Seahawks tickets on StubHub as well, and they tell you that, you know, as best they are aware, these are legitimate tickets, and if there is a problem getting in at the venue, here's the direct line to our customer service. It's a, you know, like a private kind of thing. And you just call and they will do everything they can to get you different seats. And if they can't, you'll get a refund, you know, right away. So, right. So StubHub has some, you know, some security built in, but the benefit with the Ticketmaster resale system, and I've done, you know, like I said, I'm a Seahawks season ticket holder, so there were three games this past season that I couldn't get to. Seattle's, you know, 200 plus miles away, so I can't go to all the home games. So I listed these for sale on the Ticketmaster resale system. And, you know, if somebody's willing to spend, you know, more than the face value because it's that important that they go see this one game, you know, so be it. And the benefit is that once I put them into the Ticketmaster resale system, my Seahawks tickets, my original tickets are invalid at that exact moment, right? The little barcode, the you know, the right. unique identifier for my tickets, they don't work anymore. So, you know, I can't, by using the official system, I can't, you know, sell my tickets to somebody else and then, oh, here's my my printed season tickets. I'm still going to try and get in. They don't work. So there is, you know, some extra security there.
Yeah.
But my biggest beef is when you have the company, you know, in this case, it would be Ticketmaster, controlling the inventory and telling you something is sold out when it's not.
Yeah,
and then, you know, sort of duping you into believing that this is the only way you can get a legit ticket when there are face value tickets in their system that they just haven't set to go live yet for whatever reason, whether it's a production hold or, you know, they have a whole section that they are waiting for, you know, 2 hours before showtime or whatever. It's for the uninformed consumer who doesn't know that, you know, a particular band might actually do a last minute ticket drop. You're being misled into believing that the only way you can get in to see that concert is by purchasing the resale ticket when they have the face value tickets in their inventory. They just haven't launched them to go live yet.
Yeah, that's one article or one paragraph in there deals with that of like, insiders receiving 28% of the tickets for two separate 2012 Justin Bieber shows at MSG and 29% for 2013 Kanye West shows. 38% of available tickets were held for pre-sales for by American Express, Citibank, etc. Fleetwood Mac held back 61% of tickets for a 2013 MSG show, as did Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake with 71% of tickets for a 2013 show at Yankee Stadium, which is that's a lot of the tickets. I mean, you can imagine somebody who's a big, you know, Jay-Z or Justin Timberlake fan being like panicking when whatever 29% of the tickets are gone or sold already, or that's all that's available. And you know that Yankee Stadium holds more than that many people, and you're like kind of freaking out because you're not going to get tickets for the show or whatever. But yeah, it's too bad. It's just a money issue that there's lots of people trying to get their little piece of the pie and figuring out new creative, sometimes dubiously ways to get some of that money, I guess, is the problem. And so when there's lots of money involved, there's lots of people always trying to figure out new ways. Like this young software developer working with a broker that made $42 million in 2013 selling $31 million dollars in tickets on StubHub. And he then bought a $4 million home and a Bentley luxury vehicle, which is nice. Funny that that's in the report exactly, but
you're welcome. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to figure out a better way, like what Matt was saying with the Ticketmaster system, that it could actually work, because you do need, like, somebody has to be paid for their time to do it, and it feels like Ticketmaster maybe takes a little bit more than they should or whatever. Are they a publicly traded company? They must be, hey, at this point. I don't know. Just feels like something like that would then be, you'd see like how much profit, you know, like how Apple gets in trouble for, or sort of in trouble because they make so much money, but off their sales or their thing, but other products. But yeah.
Yeah. You know, somebody, one of the complaints to the Attorney General was, why am I paying a ticket service fee when it's a paperless ticket and I'm showing it on my phone? Why am I exactly. paying for that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a convenience fee. That's my favorite. It's a convenience fee. Good Lord. Give me a break and your convenience fees.
Yeah. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how 2015 worked when, and it's not if, it's when U2 does announce the next part of the IE tour, if they're going to follow suit with how they handled things in 2015, or now that there's a lot more known about the procedure, if they'll, if it'll be more fan friendly, or if there'll be even more stricter the restrictions put into place. Maybe it'll be completely ticketless. Who the hell knows? But you know, this is certainly a hot button topic. It's been covered in Rolling Stone. It's been covered in just about every major media outlet out there, and it will be something that will be talked about. I will say this, though, that if New York successfully changes the law, it's my hope that the other 49 states follow suit, because it just needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, UTGW in the chat room mentions the I was thinking back to this, the in the 90s, I think it was, when Pearl Jam took on Ticketmaster and, you know, went to the whatever Supreme Court or whatever, I don't know, whatever. Stuff
and
in the
lost.
Yeah. And it's,
but,
like,
you know, and this is where Pearl Jam ended up having to rethink their position, because when Live Nation started taking over the industry as we know it, they couldn't get into certain venues because they weren't playing the Live Nation game. So they were playing these small ballrooms or clubs out in the middle of nowhere. They couldn't get into the major venues. They couldn't get into places with good security or good PA. You know, they were having to do everything on their own as independently as possible, and found that it was too expensive, and they weren't, the fans weren't getting a good experience out of it. And it set a precedent that you basically play with, you know, play with the corporate side of things, or, you know, you're not going to be the act that you want to be. And, you know, getting back to that whole monopoly, phrase, I'm sure that, Art Fogel loves it whenever somebody looks at Live Nation and uses the word monopoly. But that's exactly what it is from the consumer's perspective. And artists who end up getting stuck having to do these types of 360 deals, because it's the only way that they're able to perform in front of the large audiences that they want to. You know, you give up a little bit or a lot of it, a lot of your independence in order to go through all of the hoops and that of Live Nation. So, you know, it is what it is. And unless something massive shifts the company about, this is what our reality is. So suck it up and deal with it. And that's basically how I felt. Fans retreated in 2015. Tough tootsies, just suck it up and deal with it.
And follow the fan sites, because we, as I and Jeff made a good point in the live chat, that, you know, if you're connected to fans online, whether it be through us or U2Start or any of the sites, you know, all the Twitter accounts, U2Gigs, and all the country based. You know, U2 Tour DE and U2 Barcelona, you know, all the U2 Valencia. So whenever there's ticket drops, they were all, you know, tweeting it out and, you know, get your tickets now. They're on Ticketmaster or whatever the site was. So, you know, I'm glad that we all try to help each other that way. So,
yeah,
and I think and obviously we need to continue doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, there's only so much we can do, and just try to get tickets to shows that you can, and get the word out about tickets that are available. So
to wrap up this part of the conversation, if anybody has face value tickets for Adele in Seattle, let me know.
Wait, how is that? What is that? I wish
Sorry,
I had
Adele.
Hello.
All right. Hey, Chris. Hi from the other side.
See, unfortunately, Matt, you could have had it all.
Yes. When we were young. Sherry, you look like a movie. Chris, you sound like a song.
You have been listening to a lot. Okay. Yes. I think that wraps up this episode. If we're starting to quote Adele, we can be sure to submit questions, comments, thoughts to the hashtag AskAtU2 on Twitter, and we'll follow up with those on a future episode, which should be sooner than 7 weeks for the next one.
And if anybody has seen Larry or Larry's shirt, alert us promptly.
How would you know if Larry's shirt was just hanging somewhere? What would you?
Well, the shirt just tweeted me to ask me if we've been talking about him. And I just said, yes, you're missing and we miss you. So once again, anybody who might have seen Larry, let us know. We're worried about him.
How do rock stars smell like?
All right. And you can find this show, this episode is goodstuff.fm/ATU2/23. And we are on the Twitters at U2, ATU2. And facebook.com/ATU2com is where you can find us on Facebook if you want to like us over there. So, Matt, any closing comments on this first episode of 2016 before we head out?
No, I feel, have we gotten all the rust out?
I think so. I think I think we're good.
I think so.
Right. We're back. You
did record this, right?
Oh, shoot. Crap, I knew I forgot something.
The first live-only podcast in At U2 history. Hopefully the last.
Yes. So if you're listening to this, I did remember to hit record, and it worked. So we'll see you again next time. Thanks for coming. Sherry, where can folks find you on the internet if they want to have questions about your comments on things? If they're from the mafia, maybe in New York, and want to question you about your ticket sale position.
Well, I've got mafia ties in Italy, so I'm sure that they're probably a long lost cousin of mine. But you can find me at U2comSherry on Twitter.
And Matt, how about you?
At Matt McGee.
All right, and I'm Icarus on Twitter. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next time. Have a great day. Bye.